UK Wine Show, show number 60. Canopy Management with Siobhan Harnett. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 60 for the 20th of July, 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're back talking with Siobhan Harnett, the viticulturist at Cloudy Bay. We continue the interview, which we started in show number 58, but this time we're talking about the vine. There are more words spoken about grapes and winemaking, but viticulture is the powerhouse of the industry. We talk with Siobhan about how Cloudy Bay manages growing conditions and what some of the trade-offs are. The show is a bit techy, but I think most of you guys should be able to follow it. But next up, we have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, $2 Chardonnay gets top marks and German wine is getting a revamp. But first, there is concern for the UK wine industry if EU proposals to extend the planting ban go ahead. The wine reform proposes to extend the ban by an extra 3 years to 2013. Although the UK is currently below production thresholds, we could reach our limit by 2009. This would then stop us planting new vines for a period of 4 years. The other cause for concern for UK winemakers is the proposed ban on chaptalisation, or the use of sugar to enrich wines. Without sugar, the only option is to use grape must, which in some cases may not produce the desired effect and could well add to the cost of winemaking. The EU also proposes to reduce the level of permitted enrichment from 3.5% to just 2%. In certain years and for certain varieties, this could mean UK producers are unable to make the quality of wine they wish because they need sugar to boost alcohol levels in order to produce a balanced wine. Meanwhile, over in California, a wine known as Two Buck Chuck has been voted Best Chardonnay at the California State Fair Commercial Wine Competition. The wine is priced at just $2 and is produced by the Bronco Wine Company under the Charles Shaw brand. It received 98 points and a double gold, plus Best in Class and Best in California. The competition has been running since 1855 and the wines are judged by variety and not by price bracket, making this an amazing achievement. And finally this week, German wines are getting a revamp with new labelling that we British consumers can actually recognise. Producers are starting to relabel with the international grape name rather than the German name. So instead of Grauburgunder, it's Pinot Grigio, and Spätburgunder becomes Pinot Noir. German's flagship variety is, of course, Riesling, but plantings of Pinot Noir and Pinot Grigio are increasing. Pinot Noir will be a focus for the German wine industry, but winemakers are also turning their hand to rosé wine, not only for the UK consumer, but for the domestic market too. That's all this week, but 50 years ago, in 1957, Moët & Chandon released their 1949 vintage champagne with an ad showing Napoleon's first visit to their cellars. Napoleon was a friend of Jean-Rémy Moët, and the imperial domination Bru Imperial was introduced as a tribute to him in 1863. The first shipment of these wines was in 1869. Don't forget, you can check out the news in full on our news homepage at our website 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers for that, Jane. Well, I'd like to spend a bit of time talking about the Two Buck Chuck, voted California's best wine. It does show there are some good wines out there that are cheap. I was running a tasting a couple of days ago for RAF Cranwell up near Leicester. Up there, the officers couldn't stand the wine being served in the bar. I tried the wine, and while it wasn't that good, it wasn't bad either. The wine was certainly cheap, but I think a few people had decided they didn't like it and they wanted something better, and a bit of groupthink had occurred there. I get this a lot in tastings. A wine that normally shows really, really well may get slated by one or two influential people in the group, and then all of a sudden everybody decides they don't like it. I think that the Two Buck Chuck could have happened in reverse. It also may be an indication of the demand in Chardonnay. With less and less people demanding Chardonnay compared to what's planted in the ground, there's a lot of good quality grapes around. Perhaps they've been using some good quality grapes to make that Two Buck Chuck. The main story for me is the EU story, and quite specifically the enrichment of grape must rather than sugar. To me, this is just a method of getting rid of more wine lake by forcing producers to switch from sugar to concentrated grape juice. I don't mind the switch, but I am concerned about the limit to the enrichment. After all, it's the marginal growers from cool climates that are going to be hit the most. But let's face it, cool climate growers can't grow huge crops. They simply can't ripen them all. All the excess wine isn't being produced in Alsace, Burgundy, Loire or England. It's the warm to hot climates where they have the sun to ripen these huge crops that are behind the wine lake. Limiting cool climate wines will not help the wine lake. It's the producers of the cheap volume plonk that needs to be addressed. So I can't understand how they've got their head around this. Perhaps a more sensible route is to ban the acidification of wine. After all, when you're growing a huge crop in a hot climate, you lose the acidity in the wine before the wine is ready to drink. And they add acidity to the wine to bring it back into balance. No acidification means that wine's either going to be flabby and fat and quite horrible. Perhaps if the EU wants to reduce the wine lake, they should be focused upon these guys rather than the small volume quality producers. In relation to the last EU story we ran, we thought we'd run a survey online and at our tastings and find out about the banning of white Zinfandel and white Grenache wines. After all, those who listen to the show regularly will know that EU's banned white Grenache and white Zinfandel because it's got the name white in it, and these wines are actually rosé. So we started asking people, you know, what colour is white Zinfandel? Now, I had been a bit surprised by the results. 12% got it completely wrong. Of the 12, 7% thought it was red, and 5% thought it was white, and 88% thought it was rosé. That said, rosé wines are normally in a clear bottle, so you can tell the colour of the wine. I did meet a guy 2 weeks ago who went to the supermarket to buy a bottle of white wine and came home with a rosé. Even though the bottle was clear and he could see inside and see that the wine was rosé in colour, I suppose most people are okay, but there is a small percentage who are silly. And let's face it, he got the rosé home and drank it. It wasn't like his life was destroyed by the experience. The question for me is, what level of intelligence do regulators assume the public have? And also, what damage is done if the public make a mistake? With the white Zinfandel, the legislation assumes that we are fairly thick. And it also assumes that if you do buy a rosé, somehow your life's going to be destroyed by it, and they must regulate this to stop you being hurt by drinking a rosé wine instead of a white wine, or perhaps just return it to the shop. So, another classic example of legislation gone nuts. I'm not a big fan of over-legislation, and it's a bit tough living in Europe, I must admit, where legislation is part of the life. Next up, we have the interview with Siobhan Harnett. There are a couple of techie terms that we use in here that aren't explained, so probably the worst one, the hardest one, is phenolics. They're a big grouping of chemicals. In wine, it's used for flavours, colour in the wine, and also tannins. In this interview, we're referring mainly to the use of them as flavours. So, let's have the interview with Siobhan Harnett. How are you, Siobhan?
I'm well, thank you.
Excellent. You're the viticulturist at Cloudy Bay?
I am indeed.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about canopy management, because New Zealand's known quite well for different canopy styles, canopy management.
Yeah.
What are the main elements of canopy management?
Well, the idea of it and the drive behind it and the reason why New Zealanders are always banging on about it, really, is it's manipulating a vine into quite an odd and artificial shape, and it's a shape that guarantees evenness and control. Vines in their natural state, generally they'll live in a forest and they'll start off on the forest floor, and they'll cruise up the trunk of an obliging tree and then get up onto the top of the canopy of the existing trees and all their friends, and then they will just lie on the top of the forest, on the top of the trees, and they'll grow along there. So what we're doing quite artificially is training them up onto a wire, and with the pruning we lay down fresh cane along that wire, and then the following spring shoots come out of those canes, and we artificially send them upwards. And we have two sets of sort of chasing movable wires that follow them up to the top of the canopy. We stop them at about 2.2 metres from the ground, and then we will put what we call a trimmer, which takes the top and sides and trims it up. We can't let the canopies get too tall, because physically they'll tip over or fall out of the canopy. They'll snap off at the base. They'll also start shading the row next to them.
Yep, sure.
So we sort of take the top and sides off, and we'll revisit them. Sometimes you turn around. It can depend on how warm your summer is being, how aggressive that vegetative growth is. But you could revisit your vineyard anywhere from between 6 days to 2.5 weeks, and you'll have to retrim it.
You don't want to take too many leaves off, though, because the leaves are driving the sugars.
Exactly, yep. The fully expanded deep green leaves, they're net contributors. They produce more sugars than they use, and any excess will go into the growing tips, where there are baby leaves, fully expanded, or they will go into developing fruit. That's mm-hmm. another sink for sugars.
Yep.
And then further on in the autumn, the vine starts sending signals around its finest body that says send some carbohydrate or sugar storage down into the trunk for storage over winter, and down into the roots also.
Yep. You were mentioning earlier sometimes people trim the canopy too much.
Mm-hmm. You can set the trimmer, you can set it to have a thick hedgy canopy or a very fine open canopy. In our climate in Marlborough, it's very sunny but very cool. Doesn't often get over 30 degrees and the nights are very cool. Humidity is largely quite low and our sunlight levels are quite high, so we aim to have quite an open canopy. Quite thin, doesn't take long to, well, it's not too difficult to see the row over through it. If we had very thick, dense canopies, you'd have an increase in humidity and then you'd get issues with botrytis. You'd also have very shaded, nettly, steely, unripe flavours in your fruit in our climate.
With a heavy canopy?
With a dense one. Yeah, you sort of, you know, put your arm in up to the elbow and there may be scratch around, there may be some fruit in there.
What happens if you have hardly any canopy at all?
Well, two things. If it's a warm season and you've got a sort of an aromatic white wine like Sauvignon Blanc, you can end up physically getting the bunches. The temperature will go up, the flavours will advance, and they'll kind of they'll come out too soon in our autumn or late summer, so they'll evolve too quickly. You can get phenolic. You can get a little bit of sunburn, not a great deal in our region. You can get a lot of sort of phenolic development. It's kind of loss of the ideal flavours that you want.
And the other type of thing, you said, talk about trimmers. They're just big hedge trimmers on tractors, really,
They are. They're sort of often either single-sided or over the row.
Sometimes people want to expose the grapes or not necessarily expose the grapes. What's going on there?
There's a way of not only trimming the vines and taking the tops and sides off to making it more even and controllable. You can also get them with either by hand or a specialist piece of equipment that's called a leaf plucker and remove the leaves specifically around the bunches. And if you're having a cool season, or you know, you're wanting to evolve and develop and expose your bunches to the sun to warm up and ripen faster, you can mechanically leaf pluck. So you'll end up, if you go through Marlborough in March or April, you'll look at the vineyards and you'll actually see a chafering from about the bottom quarter or the bottom third of the canopy, and you'll see the leaves have been chafed away and the bunches will be hanging there and expanding and ripening.
So do you use leaf plucking a wee bit to speed things up and slow them down?
We do, and depending on the kind of season we're having, whether it's a warm advanced season or a cool season where we're falling behind, we'll sort of ratchet up how many leaves we remove from around the bunch zone. If we're having a really warm season, we'll often just trim and leave it at that. If we're having a cool season, we'll mechanically leaf pluck and repeat that and keep peeling it away. A good rule of thumb is that you should walk down the row and be able to easily see 60% of the fruit that's on the vine.
There's different types of trellising systems out there. What's quite popular in Marlborough, and what really forms the decision on the trellising systems?
Well, in Marlborough you see a lot of what's called VSP, which stands for vertical shoot position, and that VSP has been cane pruned. So we have to cane prune because we're a cool season. We don't seem to have the heat and the consequent bud fertility that we could actually spur prune.
What's the difference between cane prune and spur prune?
Well, from the summer, a cane is the result of last season's growth.
Mm-hmm.
And it will often...
After you've pruned away everything else, you're left with a couple of shoots,
yep,
effectively, from last season.
A little bud that grows over a season will produce a shoot, which then hardens off and becomes a cane.
Yep.
And we lay down up to about 4 canes for Sauvignon Blanc, typically in Marlborough. There's no shortcutting around that. People, in some varieties, in some climates, you can spur prune and it works really well. Unfortunately...
And a spur is...
A spur is like a very short cane.
Okay.
So you'll leave lots of little spurs over the vine.
Yep.
But a cane, for us, we only leave four canes, and each cane has about 12 to 15 buds. So the idea there is that your buds per vine are the important thing. That's the important thing. You don't want to leave too many buds per vine, because then your potential yield will get too great. And for us in a cool climate, we cannot afford to have heavy green crops.
It doesn't ripen, and all those green herbaceous flavours.
So we have the predominance of our canopies are vertically shoot positioned. Now with VSP, or the cane pruning that goes with it, you can actually choose to have one upward set of canopy growth, which is what most people elect to have. Or you can divide it in half, like putting a comb down your hair and parting it on either side, and that's called Scott Henry training system. It was very popular in the mid-90s, really caught hold. Mm-hmm. It's been an important contributor to Cloudy Bay. Probably what has happened now is that agricultural engineering has evolved, and we have quite swish machines, mechanical leaf pluckers with little robotic sensors that you can have different settings to have a very firm leaf pluck or a very soft and gentle one. So you get a lot of freedom and higher accuracy. So Scott Henry, we sort of keep a couple of blocks around because we have fond memories of it, and it's cute and it's part of our story. But we actually tend to VSP most of our canopies now.
Okay, so that's your trellising system is now changing because of modern techniques in terms of equipment and managing cost.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, interesting.
Or just getting a more reliable result, more accurate result. There's also another training system in Marlborough called Silvos. Silvos came into Marlborough in the mid-90s, and its sort of catchphrase was to prune at a lower cost. But with Silvos training, it really is a similar... To do it well, you're pretty much in the same ballpark as cane pruning.
So, in terms of costs and management.
Yeah. But it's just another way of going about things. People think of sort of all creative designs to get to to an agreed point. And then sometimes they can't agree about the point.
Fruit exposure in a cool climate is obviously quite important in terms of ripening things. What happens if you go too far?
Well, in a warm season... It can really work against you, and sometimes people get very enthusiastic. They mean well, but sometimes you see some vineyards getting into a bit of a habit where they will denude the vine of every single leaf around the bunch, and kind of around the traps. That's referred to not so pleasantly as a full Brazilian. So if someone comes and tells you that they think that your canopy is looking like it's had a Brazilian, it's actually a bit of a
problem.
Bit of a barbed comment. But you can see them occasionally, yeah.
Okay, I think we'll wrap it up there, Siobhan. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Siobhan. I must admit, I hadn't really thought about the leaves around the grapes as a method of controlling the ripeness of the grapes. It does make a bit of sense, I suppose. And using modern electronic leaf pluckers gives the ability to provide the level of detail that is essential. I also hadn't really thought about the development of agricultural equipment has been one of the driving mechanisms behind the trellising systems. It makes sense, as Siobhan says, training of the vine into an unusual shape is to encourage evenness of ripeness and decrease in costs. Next week, we're going to be talking to Louis Latour, owner of French Négociant powerhouse Louis Latour. We're going to be talking with Louis about négociants. So, until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.